This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Joy Powers, and thank you so much for joining us. Today, we'll continue to hear voices of those who have received the COVID-19 vaccine and those who are continuing to fight for racial justice. We learn about other times the U.S. Capitol has faced threats and hear from the hosts of the NPR History podcast, Throughline. But first, the Pfizer and Moderna COVID-19 vaccines were heralded as a godsend when they were approved late last year. But even then, we knew the rollout wouldn't be able to meet demand, and the pandemic was likely to get worse before the majority of people had access to this vaccine. Around 700 Wisconsinites died from COVID-19 just this month. And for many, it remains unclear how the vaccine will impact their ability to live without fearing this disease. Dr. Carlos Figueroa Castro is an infectious disease specialist at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin. He joins me now to answer some of these questions. Dr. Figueroa, thank you so much for being here on Lake Effect.
My pleasure.
Let's say I get my second vaccine tomorrow. Can I go back to life as normal?
Might be interesting to try to define what normal will be at some point. I guess it depends on your time frame after having your second shot, right? You get a vaccine, and this applies for pretty much every single vaccine out there, not just for COVID-19 vaccine. There is a time where your body has to react to the vaccine and build your immunity, and that doesn't happen immediately after you get your shot. It just takes a while for that to kick in. We think that that's after the second shot of the COVID vaccine, and again, just talking about the two most commonly vaccine available at this point, that the immunity that gets formed after the second vaccine tends to take a shorter period of time than the first shot. So you can imagine that the first shot gives you kind of the first exposure to that particular RNA particles. And with the second exposure, then that response tends to be a little bit faster, but it won't be immediate. So it's not like you'll get the shot and wait your 15 minutes after your shot, and then after you can go crazy and, you know, everything will be back to normal. It doesn't work that way. So it's going to be a while before we go back to what we can call normal.
Yeah, I've been curious about the time frame that we have for these vaccinations, but specifically the risks that are involved with the evolution of the virus. Right now, people are being vaccinated more slowly than we had anticipated. When we don't have as many people who are vaccinated, is that virus still evolving and changing?
Every single virus evolves. That's not only an issue with COVID-19 infection. All viruses have certain degrees of changes as just basically evolution in the making. We're very familiar with the specifics on how to measure the changes, and we have a great experience in measuring that with other viruses. And the classic example I can think of will be influenza, where we really look at the differences in the viruses, and that's related to genetic changes in certain proteins, receptors, and that's how you kind of try to build up your vaccine. So you can imagine that we have a somewhat similar framework when we started dealing with this situation. And there are different places around the world that are actually measuring those changes in the viruses.
So we might be in a situation similar to the flu, where this isn't a one-time go of us getting the COVID-19 vaccine, but rather as the virus evolves, we'll get a new version of the vaccine. Is that right?
I think it's a possibility. It's still obviously very early, I think, to judge if instead of being a pandemic situation where nobody's immune and the virus is circulating because they have a host that have not been exposed to it, it is unclear if maybe this will become a seasonal issue like we have with influenza, with many other respiratory viruses, including coronaviruses that we have seen in the past, you know. So it's still unclear whether this will become a seasonal issue. It will become a similar situation to influenza. I think the difference that you have to think about is the severity of the virus when affects a person. You know, we have, again, hundreds of viruses that can cause respiratory diseases, and thankfully the big majority of them is just causes a case of the sniffles, something very limited, and the mortality from those viruses is really small. And we don't necessarily dedicate a lot of resources from a researcher standpoint to have a vaccine for rhinovirus, for example, which is the most common cause of the common cold. But influenza is the situation where you need to have that vaccine in place because of the severity of the situation. So it's unclear if COVID-19 will end up becoming a seasonal agent like influenza. If that is the case, I can see easily that it will be a very similar situation when we'll have to keep surveillance in different parts of the world and trying to design the vaccines based on the active circulation in different parts of the country and the world.
You talked about the severity of the symptoms. And one of the things that I remember health professionals saying at the beginning of this pandemic, one of the reasons this coronavirus has been so deadly is in part because we didn't really have this built-up immunity to it. Does the vaccine help with that? So if we get a COVID-19 vaccine now, but find later that it's not completely effective, it's more like the flu vaccines that we have, should we expect, or is there a chance that the symptoms would be less severe now that we've had a vaccine and our bodies have come in contact with this?
I think it's somewhat premature to comment on that. I'm sure that there will be different studies analyzing that particular answer. And I think it just derives in the way this vaccine to get this seal of approval for rapid distribution. Again, you know, the studies that they were used to analyze these vaccines for COVID-19, the primary endpoint is just to try to decrease the severity. That was kind of the main endpoints. And there was at some point a trade-off between trying to answer that particular question and trying not to complicate too much those trials in trying to answer some other important questions. But I think the severity of the disease is what was really driving some of the concerns that we have with this pandemic. And honestly, I think it's what is really driving how the healthcare systems are getting pounded with these cases. So I think it's early to say. I can draw some similarities with influenza at some point, that where you might have the influenza disease, even though that you had been vaccinated, but we have seen that the cases tend to be milder than severe cases. So I can't say if that's going to be the same situation with COVID-19 vaccine. I think it's likely, but nobody has a good answer right now, but I'm pretty sure that we'll have some clinical trials analyzing exactly that particular question, though.
Do we know if people who've been vaccinated can spread COVID-19 to other people?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and again, I'm thinking it's very similar to your previous question. The answer is nobody knows for sure yet.
So I guess that gets to this larger question, which is really, you know, we talked about life going back to normal. I think for most people that means walking around without a mask, being in groups with people, not social distancing the way that we are right now. But if we don't know whether or not the vaccine prevents you from spreading COVID-19, then are these precautions that we still need to take as people are being vaccinated?
You're exactly correct. That's exactly why we still are sending the messages about using a mask even after you've been vaccinated. And that's exactly the reason why. We don't know if the vaccine acts also in decreasing the transmissibility of the virus to others. So until we have a good answer on that, we're still recommending the social distancing, recommending the use of a mask, recommending the use of hand hygiene. So until we had a good answer, again, based on strong science, we still recommend those measures that, in all honesty, they're not very complicated, they're very cheap. And I know that people might be having some fatigue about all this situation, which is completely understandable the way I see it. I mean, we've been kind of holding and trying to do our best now that we have the vaccine and understanding the virus more and more and more. I'm just trying to pound the message to my patients, to my family, to friends that if, you know, just try to sit tight, the help is coming. And I'm hoping that when we get those answers, then we can relax some of those precautions. But right now, we don't have those answers. So the use of masks and social distancing and hand hygiene are still in place.
There's this term that has been brought up in a lot of COVID-19 conversations, herd immunity. How many people need to be vaccinated until we have something like herd immunity?
Yeah, that will be a difficult question. We have some ideas after studying some of the natural history of this disease. I think we have a certain idea about the transmissibility of this virus based on some mathematical models and based on some observational study. So that's one variable there that helps you determine the degree of immunity that we need to have in the population so the virus don't find a viable host to keep propagating. But there is also the question on how effective the vaccine will be in cutting down the transmissibility. And again, kind of going back to your questions, there's still a question in flux.
Yeah, so I've heard between 2/3 of people or 3/4 of people should
Correct.
Be vaccinated before we have herd immunity. But it seems like right now, that's not quite certain.
Right. Again, I think it's a evolving situation. I think it's what we have been looking into based on what we have seen in the last year. But again, it's unclear what will be the impact on that with maybe new strains that might be easier to transmit. And you know, I mean, you have maybe a Darwinian process where, you know, you have different types of viruses out there circulating, but you can imagine that the one that it's easier to transmit, it's very likely that it will end up becoming a dominant virus in a particular region. So that herd immunity might be that 65%, 70% might be a number that work for all particular viruses. Maybe might not be the case if you have an area with a virus that has a higher transmissibility. So a lot yet to come, I will say.
Dr. Carlos Figueroa-Castro is an infectious disease specialist at Froedtert and the Medical College of Wisconsin.